In a world of airbrushed beauty, it can be hard to keep it real. In fact, more Americans than ever are opting for a little nip and tuck. Alex Kuczynski is a columnist for The New York Times and the author of Beauty Junkies. She says the plastic surgery business is growing by leaps and bounds.
The figures change a little bit from year to year, but usually the number one procedure in the United States is liposuction, followed by breast implants. And those two sort of, you know, challenge each other for the number one spot every year. And then after that, you have facelifts, rhinoplasty, and then on down to the much more sort of rare but nevertheless growing in popularity procedures like vaginal rejuvenation and also the vastly super, super fast growing total body lift. Yeah, well, you know, with the rise of gastrointestinal surgery, you know, for body loss, patients who have undergone gastrointestinal bypass surgery lose hundreds of pounds, but their skin does not shrink. And so their skin needs to be excised and refashioned to fit the body of the newly slender person that they are.
Wow. Is this true of a lot of cosmetic surgery? Once you start, are you kind of in it for a while? I mean, you get one procedure that leads to another that leads to another?
Well, you know, certainly in my book, I wrote about my own experience, and I found that lots of people treat cosmetic surgery as, I mean, it is addictive, not in a physiological way, obviously, but in a psychological way. You know, Botox is like the entryway drug, you know. And, you know, if you can do that, then it's just a couple of short leaps to getting your eyes done and then a couple of short leaps to having lipo and a boob job. And, you know, I didn't go that far and I've now sworn off everything. But there were lots of people I met who did look at it as a sort of natural progression, very similar to that of a drug addiction.
So is something like Botox where you start? I mean, I confess that, like anybody else, I've looked in the mirror and been shocked by the man looking back at me. Sometimes you wake up and all of a sudden you look and it isn't that 22-year-old with the dark hair and the tight skin that you thought was going to be in the mirror.
Right.
I mean, is that where Botox comes in? Is that how you kind of get started?
Well, I think, you know, I'm in New York right now, and last night I had dinner with a 25-year-old girl, basically, who had just come from the dermatologist where she had had Botox in between her eyebrows to treat the wrinkles that are called the 11s because they look like the number 11.
And she's 25.
And she had had, 25, and she had had something called Juvederm put into her upper lip. And you know, you as a person of, you know, a mature age, let's say you're 40, you know, 42, I don't know. You know, you may look at yourself in the mirror and in your generation, it is normal to think, I'm seeing some gray hair. I'm wondering, wow, I'm not the 22-year-old I once was. But what's so fascinating now is that people who actually are 22 are worrying about the most minute imperfections on their physical bodies and taking steps to change those.
Wow.
And the sort of the terrifying truth of it is that the 25-year-old with the large inflated upper lip now looks like a 40-year-old because there's this strange contradiction that happens. When you're too young and you do stuff to yourself, you begin to look like an older person who has done stuff to themselves, if you get my drift.
Yeah.
Like, a 40-year-old housewife might have a puffy upper lip, you know, sort of a desperate housewife character. But a 25-year-old young woman in New York, it was a very disconcerting experience.
I can imagine. There are other things that I confess surprised me. And
yeah.
I was really shocked by this whole business of women getting their toes shortened
right.
in order to fit into Jimmy Choo shoes. Now, tell me about that. I don't understand.
Well, you know, Oprah Winfrey did a show last week about her favorite shoes, Jimmy Choo's. And, you know, in New York, in L.A., in Chicago, in Dallas, in Miami, places where women like to spend money and show off their money, you know, shoes are the sort of totemic way to do that. And there is a doctor in New York City who will shorten your toe, who will, you know, give you a medical pedicure, meaning literally laser off any dark spots, you know, put Botox in the wrinkles around your ankles. She'll do everything short of liposuctioning a toe. And I said to her, well, why won't you do that? And she said, well, I had a patient who came in once and said, that toe is too fat, you must liposuction it. And she sent her to a shrink instead, thank God.
There's also this kind of acceptance of it that is different. I was surprised by the surgery safari that you write about. I've known people to take a safari vacation in Africa, but to go to South Africa for a safari and a little surgery while you're there, seems to me we must have moved along here.
Well, it is. Remember, I mean, oh God, I wish I could remember where the word safari comes from because it's in my book, but it comes from something meaning rebirth or renewal. And a lot of people have long thought of a safari as a renewal for the soul, you know, a sort of spiritual reawakening, a way to reconnect with nature. And I mean, just a number of, you know, smart entrepreneurs in South Africa and other third world countries, you know, have combined travel with adventure. I mean, the special allure of the surgery safari is the fact that, you know, you go out, you know, you have your facelift, you recover for a couple of days, they give you really fantastic painkillers in South Africa, you know, you're not going to get morphine in you know, your local surgeon's office in the States. And then you go, you know, bopping around in a Jeep and look at rhinoceroses and elephants and, you know, pose for a picture out in the veld. And then you come back and put the picture on your desk at work and say, ah, oh, peep. And people will say, my God, Sally Ann, you look so fabulous. And you say, oh, 3 weeks out in the veld. You know, it did me a world of good.
Well, and I gather that the price was about the same whether you had the surgery or not.
The price was so low. I mean, for these women to fly from L.A., to stay in a 4-star hotel in Johannesburg, then to go on a safari, then to fly back, I mean, it cost them about what it would cost. The entire trip cost them about what it would cost for a boob job in Los Angeles. It was truly amazing. And that's what happens when you get, I mean, South Africa is an interesting case because they have a first world medical establishment with third world prices. And medical tourism is booming in lots of other areas, you know, not just cosmetic surgery. But, you know, people fly to India for hip replacements now. You know, they have their gestational surrogacy pregnancies in India. You know, we can outsource a lot right now.
We're talking about all of this with some astonishment and with some distance, but I gather, while you've covered this as a journalist, you also are pretty honest about having been, is it fair to say, seduced by plastic surgery?
Seduced would be a good word. I mean, I, you know, started writing about the subject when I was at the New York Observer in my mid-20s. And when I moved to the New York Times, I started writing for the style section about, you know, all of these new products, the controversies, people who died on the table. And, you know, during the course of that, I sort of thought, you know, hey, I might as well try some Botox. I might as well do this. And I had figured out through my reporting who the good doctors were. I hated my saggy eyelids. I had them done.
It is it is a little bit seductive, though, isn't it? You talk about having Botox and then having your eyelids done.
Yeah.
And in your case, you went one step further and it was not pleasant.
Oh, that was, when I decided that my upper lip was too thin. And this is a big mistake. And really, you know, most women don't. You know, if you have a thin upper lip, it's okay, because having a fat upper lip makes you look older and makes you look like a crazy plastic surgery junkie, I think. Yeah, in my case, I had a filler put in my lip and wound up missing a funeral of a friend because it had swollen so dramatically. And I was sequestered in my house for 4 days. And, you know, thank God my husband was away on a trip. But it was truly frightening. And I thought, my God, what if my lip remains like this forever? You know, what will I do? I'll have to become a hermit.
So what happened?
Eventually, I wound up taking steroids for a week and using a lot of ice packs. And then after about 3 weeks, it settled down to something resembling a normal lip. And I will never, ever, ever put anything in my upper lip again. And it was the kind of, it was the sort of, you know, to use the parlance of drug addiction, it was my rock bottom moment when I said, you know what, you're 34 years old. You know, what are you doing to yourself? You know, you're not an old person. You're a young woman. Just leave all this stuff alone. And since then, I've generally kind of relaxed a lot about my appearance. And the strange thing is that the more relaxed I am about the way I look, I think the better I look, you know, which is weird because it's about confidence. And I think beauty is about confidence rather than the sort of constrained, you know, tight look that people who are worried about their looks all the time get, you know.
Alex Kaczynski is a longtime writer for The New York Times and the author of Beauty Junkies.